suspicious, skeptical of guarantees. They come with shoes sometimes, or clothes, or furniture, that we guarantee that this will work properly for 2 weeks, maybe, if you're lucky. 6 months, a year, 2 years, 10 years, depending on the product. But all kinds of guarantees, and no doubt you have been disappointed by guarantees that weren't such a sure thing. When I was in between my senior year of high school and my freshman year of college, I had the opportunity to work at a Christian camp in Hawaii. And we were going to be holding soccer camps and using those soccer camps for gospel outreach. Well, it was time for me to buy a new pair of soccer cleats. And I didn't really, through the years, get the top-of-the-line soccer cleats. My parents tried to keep me in good soccer cleats that wouldn't hurt the feet, but I never really got a really, really nice pair of soccer cleats, and so I had a little bit of money saved up somehow and went to a soccer store, and I looked around, and I got a pair of cleats. I won't tell you what brand they were, because I'm not sure that it's reflective on the company, but I got a pair of very nice leather soccer cleats. And so I even got a little bit of leather treater to put on it and rub in it, and I was going to keep these cleats nice. I had put a whole lot of money into them. Well, it was a lot of money for a high school grad, but it wasn't exorbitant, but they were a nice pair of cleats. And so we flew over the Pacific and got into Hawaii and started running these camps, these day camps for soccer, and using them for gospel outreach. And the Lord gave us success in getting the gospel to some kids. But we were playing lots of soccer almost every day of the week, and even sometimes on the weekend we were playing soccer. So my cleats were getting broken in, and I had tried to break them in a little bit before we had flown over so that I didn't rub blisters or have any pain from these cleats, because I knew I'd be wearing them a lot. Well, just a few weeks in, maybe 3 or 4 weeks into the summer, my nice cleats started ripping. And they were right behind my big toe, and they started ripping where the leather meets the sole. And by the time I'd gotten home, they had ripped in probably a 3 or 4 inch gash. Now, these were cleats that should have been guaranteed to last more than 6 weeks. So after I get back from Hawaii, I go back to the soccer store, and what am I doing? I'm looking for a new pair of cleats, even though I've just spent a large amount of money on cleats that should have lasted me. There are no guarantees in this life. And because there are no guarantees, sometimes we get skeptical and sometimes we wonder if there's anything that can be trusted. In Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 4, we find the statement where the Lord tells us that by humility and the fear of the Lord, we can expect riches, we can expect honor, and we can expect a long life. That's what God says. And yet as you look around, you can probably, maybe by your own personal experience, vouch that there are people who are humble and who fear the Lord, and they're not at all rich. There are people that are humble and fear the Lord, and they're not honored in this life. And there are people who are humble and fear the Lord who die young. And we look at a verse like Proverbs chapter 22 and we say, are there any guarantees in life? I'll ask you to turn this morning to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. The short answer to that question is, this life really doesn't have a lot of guarantees. Well, that's not very assuring. So why don't we just eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die? Well, before you throw in the towel, Solomon's going to acknowledge this perceived difficulty that there are godly people who die very young. And there are ungodly people who live on and on and on and on. There are godly people who are poor and despised. And there are ungodly people who are rich and well-respected. And we say, wait a second. I thought God said in Proverbs chapter 22 that if I was humble and I feared the Lord, that I would have riches and honor and life. And to answer that question, are there any guarantees in life, we have to understand what a proverb is. A proverb is a general statement of what typically happens in life. A proverb is not a promise. And when God uses the genre of a proverb to communicate truth to us, He does so expecting that we'll realize that a proverb is not a promise. For instance, some of you have held on to the proverb, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But I guarantee you, even if you eat an apple a day, if you're smart, you'll still go to the doctor once in a while. And you say, well, that proverb's not true. Well, some proverbs are more consistent than others, but the point is it's not a promise. It's a general life truth. The general principle would be, if you eat healthy, you probably should have to go to the doctor less than somebody who doesn't. That's generally true. God says that if you are humble and you fear Him, it tends towards more honor and a longer life. That's generally true. But there are exceptions. And Solomon recognizes those exceptions and wants to communicate to us how to deal with those exceptions. Rather than losing your faith and throwing in the towel, there's a better way to deal with those exceptions, those guarantees that seem like they have failed. And he gives us that advice in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 15, he says, I have seen everything during my lifetime of futility or vanity. There's a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness. There's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. Do not be excessively righteous. Do not be overly wise. Why should you ruin yourself? Don't be excessively wicked and don't be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It's good that you grasp one thing and not let go of the other, for the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. On initial reading, we begin to think that Solomon may have lost his marbles. That all of a sudden he got through chapter 7 and verse 14 and then had a little bit of difficulty remembering what he was trying to communicate about God and a person who fears God. Don't be excessively righteous. What do you mean, Solomon? Just a little bit of life, just find the balance. Don't be too righteous, but don't be too much of a pagan. But a little bit of wickedness will be okay for you. But just as long as we say, what are you saying, Solomon? It's very imperative that we understand what Solomon is saying so that we can put it into practice. What is he saying? Verse 15, he says, I've seen a lot of things during my lifetime of vanity. I've had a frustrating life. It's been short. Hasn't lasted long. And he says, I've seen everything. I've experienced everything in this life of vanity. And one of the things I've experienced is a little bit unsettling, he says. He says, I've written proverbs about by fearing the Lord that you'll have riches and honor in life, and yet I've seen situations that seem to have contradicted that. He says, I've seen situations where there's a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man whose life is prolonged in his wickedness. And we say, what gives? The righteous man dies young. We can think of biblical examples of this. Take Stephen, one of the first deacons and a fantastic preacher. And he dies what we would call a premature death. He was righteous. Think of Naboth, the story of Ahab and Jezebel. The righteous guy dies prematurely and the wicked people live on and on. And we say, that's not fair. Solomon says, I've seen it in my lifetime and you've probably seen it too. You probably know wicked people who are pushing 90 or 100. And you've known very godly people who didn't even make it to 20 or 30. This is reality in a planet filled with vanity. We can't explain all of life's unsolved mysteries. Why God allows the righteous person to die early, and why God allows the wicked person to live a long time. We can't explain all of life's unsolved mysteries, but we can learn to live wisely with them. And that's what Solomon's going to help us to do. He's not going to explain this unsolved mystery, but he is going to explain to us how we can learn to live wisely and to cope with it. So verse 16, he begins that explanation and he says, don't be excessively righteous and do not be overly wise, for why should you ruin yourself? If I just quoted that to you, I walked up to you this morning and said, hey, good to see you this morning. Can I just give you a piece of advice? Don't be excessively righteous and don't be overly wise. You would look at me and think I had lost it. And then I told you, well, that comes from the Bible. You would say, no, I don't believe it, because it doesn't sound like what we know to be true. So what is Solomon saying? Do not be abundantly or greatly righteous, and do not be overly wise or excessively wise. Some people think that Solomon is talking about a legalistic righteousness like the Pharisees, who thought they were righteous. They were excessively righteous. They followed their own made-up rules. And that's possibly what he's talking about, but I'm not sure that's the direction he's going. May I suggest to you, this is what I think Solomon is saying. He's saying that there are righteous people who love God, they fear the Lord, they want to do right. But they have this misconception that because they love God, they're going to have a good life on planet Earth. They are going to have riches. They are going to have honor. They are going to have a long life. And they think that by living righteously, that guarantees that they will have a great life on planet Earth. I think that's what he means by excessively righteous. It's not that being righteous is the problem. It's that they think that by being very careful and very meticulous about righteousness, that guarantees them a good life on planet Earth. But he just said that doesn't work that way all the time. Living righteously does not guarantee you will have an easy and long life on Earth. And he says if you live with that false hope, that it's guaranteed that if I just do the right thing and fearing God, that I'll live a long time and have a good life on planet Earth. He says there at the end of the verse, you will ruin yourself. And that word ruin means to become appalled. You will get disillusioned if you think that just because you're one of God's children, that you're going to have a great life on planet Earth. He says, you can ruin yourself. You can become appalled at this, that your righteousness is not making life easy, and you thought it would. So at this point, you may be wondering, well, if righteousness doesn't guarantee a full and good life on earth, is it even worth living righteously? Because I know what comes along with living righteously: persecution, trials, tribulation. Is it even worth living righteously if it doesn't guarantee that I'll have a good life on planet Earth? If I'm going to die at 40, why bother being so careful about being godly? There are no guarantees in this life. Well, is it worth it? Theologically, we know the answer, but practically, we don't a lot of times. What's the answer? Well, look at verse 17. He says, don't be excessively wicked and don't be a fool, for why should you die before your time? And before some of you make that your life verse and go to your parents and say, see, a little wickedness is okay. What's Solomon saying? He says, don't be excessively wicked and don't be a fool. Obviously, he's not encouraging us to sin a little bit. I think what Solomon is recognizing, that no matter if you are a righteous person living in the fear of God, you're still going to sin. There's still going to be a little bit of wickedness in your life at times. That's just reality. He says, I hope it's not excessive, but everybody is going to experience sin and wickedness in their life. He's just recognizing that fact. So he says, reality is you're going to sin, but when you do, don't go to excessive wickedness. Get it confessed and get right with God. Because he says, don't be a fool. A fool sins and doesn't see any immediate consequences, and so they continue on in that sin. He says, don't be a fool and plunge headlong into sin just because nothing bad seems to be happening to you. He warns you, he says, why would you die before your time? He acknowledges that there are some exceptions to Proverbs 22:4, and there are some fools that just seem to live on and on and on and on. But he comes back to this proverb and he says that the general way it works in life is that most fools will die a premature death. Though some fools live a very long time, they're the exception, not the norm. So Solomon says, don't think that that'll be guaranteed for you if you go the course of a fool. You're not guaranteed a long life as a fool. He says the opposite is true. Most fools will die a premature death, though there are a few exceptions. So what does he say in verse 18? He says, it's good that you grasp one thing and not let go of the other. What's he talking about? I think he's talking about those things are depending on your righteousness, thinking that that's going to guarantee a long life. He says, don't forget that. That's true. Don't expect that you're going to live a long life just because you're a righteous person. He says the other thing is don't live loosely and die a premature death. He says hold on to both of those things. Grab onto the one truth. Don't let go of the other. And if you fear God, he says you'll come forth from both of them. He says it's all about the fear of God. And lest we think that, well, if I die at 40, what's the point of being a righteous person? He says, oh, it's better that you fear God. Fearing God is always the better alternative, but it doesn't guarantee an easy life. But it is the better option. And that's the first truth that Solomon gives to us this morning, answering our question, are there any guarantees in life? He says, first of all, that wisdom does not guarantee a long life on this earth. Wisdom does not guarantee a long life on this earth. But by the way, it's still the better choice. Wisdom doesn't guarantee a long life on earth. But he says fearing God is the right choice. Wisdom also doesn't guarantee one other thing. Look at verse 19. He says, wisdom strengthens a wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. Indeed, there is not a righteous man on earth who constantly does good and who never sins. Also, don't take seriously all words which are spoken so that you will not hear your servant cursing you. For you also have realized that you likewise have many times cursed others. At first, it appears that there's no connection with verses 15 to 18. But I think what Solomon is giving us, he's giving us a second goad, a second harsh reality to remind us that on planet Earth, we're not guaranteed these things. He says, not only does wisdom not guarantee that you'll have a long life, wisdom also doesn't guarantee sinless perfection. He says, verse 19, wisdom does strengthen a wise man more than 10 rulers who are in a city. And before we throw in the towel and say, forget wisdom, forget the fear of God, he says, wisdom is still the best choice. Because wisdom will strengthen a wise person more than 10 rulers who are in a city. He says it's not who you know. It's not what position you have. but it's what you are that gives you inner strength and conviction. He says a wise person will have this strength, this God-given grace, this God-given strength. And he says that's even better than knowing 10 rulers who are in a city. It's not necessarily strength in numbers or strength in power or strength in position. He says it's strength of character that will make a difference. So don't throw off wisdom. Don't throw off living in the fear of God. Wisdom is still the better choice. But that being said, wisdom does not guarantee sinless perfection in this life. And that's what he says in verse 20. If I read verse 20 to you out of the blue, you might think it was from Romans chapter 3. And this may be the only verse in Ecclesiastes that's quoted in the New Testament. Sounds very much like Paul's teaching, doesn't it? He says, there is not a righteous man on earth who constantly does good and never sins. You say, well, I don't see what's the connection between that and verse 19. I think this is the connection. That because we are sinners, he says, verse 20, we need godly wisdom. If I think that I'm the exception to needing wisdom and I can cast off wisdom, Solomon reminds me here that I'm not a person who never sins. And because I sin, I need this godly wisdom. All people as sinners need this wisdom because there's not a righteous human being on earth who does good and who does not sin. And this word sin has the idea of missing the mark. Or as Paul puts it, falling short of the glory of God. God set the standard and I've missed it. I've missed the target by a long shot. And he says that's true of every one of us. Every person on earth sins. No one's the exception. We do what God has told us not to do. That's sin. God says, don't do this, and I do it. That's sin. But he also says there's not a person who does good all the time. God tells me to do these things and I don't do them. So Solomon covers both sins of what we would say commission and omission. God tells me not to do things and I do them. God tells me to do things and I don't do them. And that's the reality for every one of us. He says there's not one person who does good and who does not sin. Every person on earth sins. And because every person on earth is a sinner, we not only need forgiveness, once we get that forgiveness in Jesus, we need that wise wisdom of God. He says, secondly, that wisdom does not guarantee sinless perfection on earth. We wish it does, but that's not going to happen in this life. That's not guaranteed in this life. And even though it's not guaranteed, it's still the best choice because there is a next life. Verses 21 and 22. As we read through those, it kind of appears that Solomon's just tacking on all these unrelated things together, and I'm not sure that that's the case. I think 21 and 22 are an illustration of his point in verse 20. He says, everybody's sinful. Even if you're a righteous person, you still sin. He says, let me illustrate that for you in verses 21 and 22. And so he gives us a true-to-life illustration, verse 21. Don't take seriously all the words which are spoken. He says, don't let it get to your heart. Don't get too upset about all the words which are spoken so that you won't hear your servant cursing you. Your servant who should be respectful and honoring you and thankful for what you pay them. He says, your servants will curse you. And when we think of cursing, we think of profanity. And that's certainly involved in this word. But the word is broad enough to include things like mockery, slander, gossip, belittling, criticizing, knocking somebody down to size. Basically, the word has the idea, it can have the idea of making light of somebody, treating somebody with contempt or disdain. Well, if you're a boss, You know that all too well. You come into the break room and the guys don't realize that you're there, the ladies don't realize that you're there, and they're talking, and you hear them talking about you. Oh, our boss, he's just ridiculous. The expectations he has on me. And then you walk in and everybody smiles and sips on their coffee really fast like nothing happened. That's the reality of a workplace. And we say, I know, Pastor Michael, and it drives me nuts. That's why I hate being a leader, why I'm being an employer. Well, he says, hold on just a second. There's something you got to remember, verse 22. Don't take it too seriously, he says, for you also have realized that you likewise have many times cursed others. Literally, he says, you know in your heart that many times you have also cursed others. You say, I've never directed a profanity at somebody. Have you talked bad about your parents before, maybe, with your friends? Have you denigrated a teacher behind her back? Have you let your boss have it when she wasn't around? Have you gossiped about a friend? Have you slandered somebody in the church? Have you spoken to your wife disrespectfully and ungodly? Okay, yeah, I've done that. And then he says, then, you know in your heart that you've many times spoken badly about other people. So Solomon reminds us that our attitude towards others must reflect an understanding of my own personal flaws. Harsh, critical, judgmental people don't understand verse 22. Because if I understand my own flaws, my own sinful tendencies, if I understand verse 20, that I'm not a person who never sins and I violate God's commands all the time, then I'm going to be very, very lenient and tolerant with other people. If you are harsh, if you are critical, if you are impatient, then you've got an overinflated view of yourself. Because if I have the right attitude about my own flaws, I'll recognize that when other people sin, they're just doing what I've done before myself. Maybe in a greater magnitude, but I'm still guilty of similar things. Well, how does that connect with verses 19 and 20? He's saying, folks, remember, you're a sinner too. And you've got to treat other people with that wisdom, with that recognition. They're sinners, you're sinners, that's life. Godly wisdom does not guarantee sinless perfection out of you, your family, your fellow church members. That's not something that's guaranteed in this life. You say, well, then is it the right thing to choose? It sure is, because there's a next life too. These guarantees aren't good for this life. You can't cash this in this life. You can't go up to the counter and say, I'd like to claim sinless perfection, and I would like to claim my long life that's rightfully mine. Say, I'm sorry, we don't sell that here. We don't make that guarantee. Our warranty only covers this. God's warranty doesn't guarantee sinless perfection in this life. God's warranty doesn't guarantee an easy, good, long life on planet Earth. His warranty doesn't cover that. That doesn't mean it's a bad warranty. His warranty primarily deals with the next life. What does his guarantee in this life cover? In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. My peace I leave with you. My peace I give with you, not as the world gives. Don't let your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. He says, I don't guarantee a sinless perfection from you or from people that interact with you. I don't guarantee you a long life for being righteous. He says, but what I do guarantee is I guarantee grace to help, and I guarantee amazing reward in the next life. That's the guarantee. But if I expect other people to treat me perfectly, I'm going to be a very frustrated person. I'm going to be a very critical church member here. If I expect a long life and I expect riches and I expect to be honored and respected here in this life, then I'm going to be a very frustrated and very disappointed and disillusioned person, maybe to the point where I walk away from the faith. It's important to know what God's warranty covers and what God's warranty does not guarantee. He says wisdom doesn't guarantee an easy life on earth, but it's still a much better choice than the alternative. He says you can choose to live like a fool, but that's no better, and actually it's much worse. Right after university and I enrolled in seminary, I applied for a grad assistantship, which would basically cover your room, board, and tuition, and a small monthly stipend, and you would put in not quite a full-time job, but you would work for them, and then they would provide your room, board, and tuition, and then you could go to school and come out without debt. And my first grad assistantship was teaching 11th grade Bible to about 120 kids a year. And it was an enjoyable job. Definitely had its challenges, but definitely had its perks. And I enjoyed communicating to these kids, teaching them, interacting with them. Part of my responsibility at the high school was to coach. And so in the fall, I would coach a soccer team. And then in the winter, I would coach a basketball team. And they had the students divided up into about, I think, six teams. And we were at the beginning of our basketball season. We were about to launch in. And they had what was called a jamboree. It didn't count towards the records. It didn't matter whether you win or lost. It was just a time for you to come out and try different lineups and get the guys a little bit of experience playing together. Just a warm-up for when the real season started. So they would have shorter games, and you would play a bunch of different teams. And so we were waiting in one of the side rooms because there was a game or two before us. And I was talking to the guys, and we were getting ready to go out there and play our first game of the year. And one of my students was playing for the other Bible teacher, a guy named Joel Hufstetler. Joel was their coach, and they were playing one of the games before us. The boy's name was Apollo. His family was of Filipino descent. I think his dad had come over to go to school. Apollo was 16 years old, a nice young man, very, very quiet. Hadn't gotten to know him well throughout the year, but seemed like a nice kid. And as they were playing and we were watching through some doors there from the side room, we were watching. And Apollo was running down the court, and he kind of stumbled and almost fell. Just kind of looked like maybe it tripped or something. I didn't think a whole lot of it. Probably some guys kind of snickered. And then as a little bit later, maybe they went up the court one time on offense and came back on defense, he stumbled again. And so Joel must have pulled him out of the game. His coach must have pulled him out of the game. And he came over and collapsed on the bench there. And died. Just like that. And so all the excitement of the opening of the basketball season, they pulled him over. They pulled him over to the side by the guy's locker room and got medical attention. But as Joel related it to me later, Paulo basically died in my arms there on the bench. Well, this gets your attention. He was a nice kid. He was 16 years old, long life ahead of him, parents that love the Lord. Earlier that year, maybe even that semester, I'd had the students fill out a worksheet on missions where they answered some various questions about what the Bible teaches about missions and getting the gospel to unreached people. And I tried to be very practical as a teacher and asked them some practical questions about listing missionaries that they were praying for on a regular basis, asking if they were praying that God would send laborers out into the harvest. Are you considering whether God wants you to be a missionary? Do you give to missions? And I asked them this question. Number five was, approximately how many people have you gotten the gospel of Christ to in the past months? By tracts or talking to them verbally about Christ. And I saved this. I wanted to keep a copy of this. I think this might actually be the original copy that Apollo turned in. And on that question number 5, how many people have you gotten the gospel of Christ to in the last 2 months? No doubt many of the students, it was 0, 1. And Apollo wrote down 10. 10. Would we be able to say we've gotten the gospel of Christ to 10 people in the last 2 months? And you can look at a situation like this and you can scratch your head and you can say, I've seen a righteous person dying young and I've seen a wicked person living a long time. And I don't get it. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure I really got it either. I don't have to figure out God. All I've got to do is trust Him. Because whether you die at 16 like Apollo and your life is snuffed out, we would say from a human perspective, prematurely, whether you die at 16 in an instant or you live to 90, God says living in the fear of Him is still the best way to live. Even though He's not going to guarantee you a long life, even though He's not going to guarantee sinless perfection in this life, He guarantees them both in the next. Wisdom is still the best choice. So don't let these unsolved mysteries throw you for a loop and say, God, I don't get it. I'm not sure I want to serve a God who would let a righteous person die young and would let a wicked person live a long time. I don't want to serve a God who doesn't guarantee these things. Solomon doesn't explain these unsolved mysteries for us. He just acknowledges them, says that they're there, and he says, here's how you can still live in wisdom in spite of these unsolved mysteries. So maybe as believers, maybe what we should be spending the focus of our time on is not so much trying to figure out God's sovereign ways, other than what the Scripture reveals to us. Maybe we shouldn't spend so much time asking why. Maybe we should spend more time asking, what do I need to do to walk more and more in the fear of God and in godly wisdom? Because even though life doesn't have these two guarantees, the next life does, and wisdom is always the best choice. Are there any guarantees in life? Yes and no. Not so much in this life, but wonderful ones for the next. Would you bow your heads, please? We're going to respond to the Lord at our seats individually. And I don't know what God is doing in your heart today, but I trust He's doing something. In whatever way He wants you to respond to this message, maybe it's just by faith saying, God, I'm going to stop trying to figure out your sovereign plan. I'm just going to obey what I know to be true. I'm going to walk in godly wisdom and in the fear of God. Maybe you're so frustrated with other people that are not perfect and are speaking against you, and God has reminded you, you're not perfect either. There's nobody who does good all the time and doesn't sin. So the response is, Lord, I need wisdom to know how to deal with them. Whatever God has done in your heart today, let's seal it here at the time in response and commitment. Lord, I thank you for bringing us to this passage on this day, because I needed this passage. And you have spoken to me about how I need to grow. And I trust, Lord, that you have spoken to many others with open hearts today. Lord, seal these decisions. We don't want this just to be a 2-day change. We want it to be lasting by your grace. Thank you for the wonderful guarantees and promises, but help us to understand what they are so that we can live in the fear of God and live in godly wisdom this week. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.